Hello, Gail. Thank you for coming to WMUK to talk to us, and congratulations on your second poetry collection, Begin Empty Handed.
Thank
And I
you.
understand there's a prize
There
associated
is
with
a
it.
prize associated with it.
So tell us
Yes.
about that prize.
Begin Empty Handed won the 2013 Perugia Press Poetry Prize. A lot of P's there. Perugia Press is in Massachusetts. It's a small independent press in Northampton, which was developed to publish first and second books by women poets because we are still underrepresented. And the editor is a woman named Susan Kahn, or Kahn, and she gave me a phone call, I think it was February 1st, to let me know that my manuscript had been chosen from over 500, which still
Nice.
dazzles me, as the winner of this year's contest. So I've gotten to know her a little bit via email and phone, but they're bringing me out for a book tour in November. I'll be reading in Northampton and Shelburne Falls in Boston. So
Nice.
I'm really looking forward to that
Yeah.
and having a chance to get to know her a little bit. It's a terrific press. They've published some good people.
Yeah, I've looked at their list
Yeah.
and yeah, congratulations. That's
Thanks.
wonderful.
Yeah.
Gail, you're clearly a poet, obviously. That's why we're here. But in your other life, you're also a therapist. So I was curious as I was reading this collection on how the two intersect. Do they intersect? Does one affect the other?
I do believe that these two jobs inform each other. Maybe not always in real direct ways. I have an ongoing curiosity about people and how we find our way and how we make meaning in our lives. So my work as a therapist, as well as a poet, is exploring and probing with an intent to understand that. At the same time, it's an ongoing practice at being at some measure of peace with the mystery, because I don't think we ever understand it all.
Yeah, I've always thought though that writers, and in that I include poets or psychologists at heart. I think that's part of why we write, because we're so fascinated with the inner workings
The
of
going inward,
human
yes.
beings. Yeah, this isn't your first book. New Issues Press published your first collection, The Hourglass Heart, in 2003. Do these collections differ, or did you feel that the second one was an evolution of the first, or how do your babies compare?
I think they are different. I think my obsessions and my concerns, are similar. My book From New Issues was published 10 years ago, and it really felt like enough. I didn't have any necessary expectation that I would publish another collection. I love to write. I continued to write. I love hanging out with writers and talking about writers. And then this book came together very fast. It was accepted very fast. So I think I'm a little more attached to this work than I was with The Hourglass Heart, which was longer in production. I tend to lose interest in my poems pretty quickly, which I've been criticized for. I still love them, but my energy moves in new directions pretty fast. And I'm still pretty engaged with a lot of these pieces,
Does that
so.
mean you're already working on collection three?
No, it does not. It means I'm continuing to try to find time to write.
As I read this collection and even the cover, if you can see the cover, there is a white bowl on there with what appears to be a dead woodpecker, poor
Maybe
thing.
napping.
Maybe napping. I like that better. And as I read it, I noticed that there were a lot of references to birds, sometimes in a major way, sometimes just flitting through the poem. Were you aware of that? Was that intentional? Or what do birds symbolize to you?
Honestly, when I completed the collection, I was surprised to find how many birds are in this book. Certainly, Birds pepper my days. I have a feeder suctioned to my window at my wonderful office, which is a beautiful space looking out into trees. I counted 19 cardinals wow. in my serviceberry tree one day last winter. My client said, "Look, the cardinals are having happy hour."
Oh, so that's why he's like that in the bowl. It's after happy hour.
Birds have their mysteries. I am drawn to their beauty. I don't know too much about them. I don't know why sometimes the feeder is hopping and the next day empty. My brother suggested that it wouldn't be too hard to learn more about them. But part of the joy for me is not needing to do that. I wondered if I could read an excerpt from a poem that kind of speaks to that.
Oh, absolutely. Love to hear it.
It's entitled, "The Therapist Watches Birds." This is toward the end of the poem. "I don't care deeply about birds. I enjoy them. They raise questions in a casual way. I have found them with their necks broken at the base of my window. There are cats and fox and snakes. Some nights are just too cold. I am not responsible. Right now, as I watch, a chickadee is pedaling in space, outwaiting a wren at the feeder. He looks like someone running off a cliff in a cartoon, suddenly realizing the ground beneath him has fallen away."
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Talk to us about the title, Gail. Begin Empty Handed, and the title poem had birds in it too. But what I'm always intrigued with how someone chooses a title for a collection. What was the thought behind that?
I'm so happy with this title. I love this title. It just clicked into place. The title with my initial collection was really a painstaking process and never felt quite right to me. And this was the opposite experience. I really envision hands and how our hands embody both receptivity and also have the capacity to give. So that reciprocity of giving and receiving is something that keeps me thinking about what do I want to release in my life and what do I want to hold on to or take in or ask to receive. So the image of empty hands for me speaks to the ways in which we also are able to morph from teacher and student, which, you know, in life, certainly if we're paying attention, but definitely that's true in my work. I mean, I feel like I am learning as much as I'm teaching. I'm also really, really fond of compound words and have been since first grade, so that was a pleasure to me.
Poetic quirk.
Yeah, yep.
Okay. You don't shy away from looking at painful realities, and that makes me kind of think of your therapist self as well. And reviewers have said that this collection moves between life as we expect it and life as it is. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was identified as a paradox, and I don't know that I think it's a paradox. Certainly, I agree that there's a gap there. It speaks, I think, to our need to make space for both the wonder and everyday miracle of living, but also the harsh pain of knowing that all that we are attached to and all that we love will ultimately be taken away. And I don't see it as either or, but both and. I have a strong identification with the ideal, so I tend to be disappointed a lot when life doesn't live up to that. So I need to work to stay open to the possibility that life being different than what I thought it was going to be means that it's different, not necessarily that it's less.
Yeah.
But I am trying to hold both things.
And I'm not sure that I would agree with any of those reviewers or that description, because I think life is that way. Mm-hmm. You know, it is both. And life is a paradox. It's both things at once or many things at once. So to me, that makes sense. How do you approach poetry? Do your poems find you, or do you have to go looking for those poems? How does that work for you?
I usually begin with an image, or something I overhear, that I will write down that just interests me for some reason. I'm pretty irregular in my writing habits. I write every day. I mean, I put pen to paper every day, but it's journaling. And I think that that is valuable because it slows me down. And I suppose it's also a place where I find out what I want to notice and what I want to bring in and what I need to release. It's a vehicle for bearing witness to my own experience. If I see a fawn outside my window at work, the number of people who might find that really interesting is probably not that great, but to me, was a big deal that morning. And so I write it down, and somehow that reminds me of what's important to me, but it's not creative.
So are you a poet who rewrites a lot, or do you find
Yes, I
that
love
you do?
revising.
Okay,
Yes.
okay.
Yes.
And you're a member of some writer groups in Kalamazoo?
I am so lucky to be part of several revision groups.
And do you rely on that? Is that important in your process?
Yes, there are a lot of good teachers, a lot of fabulous writers, and a lot of good teachers. Two important lessons I've learned over the years about me and my process. One was from Dai Seuss, who said, "Try to make it casual." And then I worked more recently with Tracy Bremhall, who just taught me some ways to make it playful. And I was raised with an eye toward productivity, so sometimes it's very hard to abandon myself to something that is so much process, or there's a product, but you're not interested in anyone ever seeing it. So Susan Ramsey, who's a wonderful writer who lives two doors north of me, has both the burden and privilege of often seeing my work first. And also my youngest daughter, Caitlin, recently moved back to Michigan from deep south Texas, and she is also a poet. And she's the recipient of early drafts as well. So they might see it before either of the critique groups whose kindness and opinions I very, very, very much appreciate.
So even though writers are supposed to be solitary figures, it can take a whole support group to get us going.
And yeah, and just people who say, "Well, that may be what you're feeling, but it's not on the page yet." You know, because sometimes there's a gap there as well.
Sure. Are you going to have area readings or book signings that we can look forward to?
Yes. I have three readings in October. The first one is October 3rd at Portage District Library at 6:30. I have another reading at the Kalamazoo Book Arts in the Sanawex building downtown. That will be with Sean Thomas Doherty, who I
Nice.
haven't met, but is a very, very strong and energetic writer. And then October 25th with Susan Ramsey and Jack Riddle at the Book Bug in Oakwood Plaza. These and more are on my website, which is gailmartinpoetry.com. Book Bug and Michigan News have been terrific about promoting and supporting local writers. Begin Empty-Handed is available at both of those places, as well as from Perugia Press. And that's all on the website as
Yeah,
well.
we're lucky to have the kind of literary
We
support
are
we have in
so
Kalamazoo.
fortunate. Yes.
Well, I'll definitely try to make at least one of those.
Good.
So thank you,
Good.
Gail. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and best of luck with your book.
May I close with one poem?
Please do.
All right. This is entitled "Sometimes Night is a Creek Too Wide to Leap." The sky wears black serge pants while hemming up another pair for tomorrow night. A bit shorter, but you won't notice. Some nights, the blue pill brings a dream where a young girl is trying not to cry in the sheep pasture, stuck where her brothers eyed the watery gap and mossy stones and sailed right to the other side. We didn't know about E. coli then, how our waiters must have buzzed with it. By the time I was 10, I'd pared my list of things I was scared of down to 4. The high board, hoods and kidnappers, blue racers, and shaking hands with Uncle John, who'd lost 4 fingers in the corn picker. I pushed the scared parts of me away, like the 2 finches my mother watched nudge a dead fledgling off the edge of her deck.